lograría mejorar mucho la condición del pueblo haitiano. Hay que señalar que, entre otras cosas, el pueblo haitiano ha ido devastando la vegetación, una riquísima vegetación que tenía esa parte de la isla, y que entonces se enfrenta a problemas, por ejemplo, de erosión, etcétera. Esto es muy sensible, porque si uno viene a pensar en la independencia de Venezuela y de otras muchas naciones que liberó Simón Bolívar, se deben a la generosa e incondicional ayuda que le prestó Alexander Petión a Simón Bolívar cuando este llegó exiliado. Los españoles habían acabado con la Primera República. Bolívar se exilia en el Caribe y en una de esas llega a Haití. Y en Haití, Petión le ofrece ayuda para una expedición, para varias expediciones libertadoras, poniéndole como única condición la libertad de los esclavos. Fíjate qué generoso. Hay que decir que Bolívar ya había empezado a liberar a los esclavos en Venezuela, por lo cual aceptar esta condición, por demás humanitaria, no le significó ningún problema. Y además toda su vida defendió en todos los sitios donde tuvo poder la liberación de los esclavos. Pues hoy es el tiempo de que América Latina corresponda a esta generosa iniciativa de los haitianos. Fueron los primeros en declarar y ganar su independencia en el ámbito de la región, y además los primeros en ayudar generosamente un proceso independentista al cual vendría la libertad de una gran cantidad de países, de Venezuela, de Colombia, Ecuador, de Perú, incluso de Bolivia. Posiblemente, de no ser por la ayuda haitiana, no se hubiera dado ese proceso, o hubiera tardado un poco más y hubiera tenido mayores dificultades. Entonces, América Latina debe corresponder con generosidad a esta generosidad desinteresada y fraterna de los haitianos.
El general del Ejército Libertador, Emiliano Zapata, manifiesto zapatista en Nahuatl.
En México, el Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional, el EZLN, también celebra el 20 aniversario de su levantamiento armado contra el gobierno central. La acción rebelde de 1994 ocurrió en parte por la anulación de importantes artículos de la Constitución mexicana que le darían a extranjeros acceso a tierras comunales de indígenas. Juan de Dios Hernández Monge es un catedrático de la Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México y miembro del colectivo de abogados zapatistas.
En estos 20 años han logrado consolidar un sistema de justicia autónomo, una justicia que no busca el castigo, una justicia que no busca la venganza, sino una justicia que busca la inserción. Una justicia que no es impartida por notables, por individuos, sino que es una justicia comunitaria en donde la familia, el entorno más cercano del que ha cometido una falta, es la que va a determinar la sanción que la propia comunidad le va a imponer a esta persona. Han desarrollado una forma, y quizás eso es lo más importante, una forma de gobierno basado en la autonomía, en el acuerdo 169 de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, y que ahora ya a partir del año 2007 aparece también en el artículo segundo de la Constitución mexicana. Han logrado desarrollar una forma de gobierno autónomo, han creado el poder popular desde el abajo y a la izquierda, con el mandar obedeciendo, en donde prácticamente todos los miembros de las comunidades de influencia zapatista tienen ya la experiencia en el gobierno, de tal suerte que ya nadie les puede decir que gobernar es muy difícil. Ellos han visto que gracias a ese gobierno que ha organizado la producción colectiva en las tierras colectivas zapatistas, hoy los alimentos que cosechan iluminan las mesas de estas comunidades zapatistas. Han logrado abatir esa hambre ancestral de cientos de años que habían sufrido estas comunidades mayenses, y que gracias a esta insurrección zapatista hoy han recobrado un concepto que puede parecer para algunos una cuestión cursi, pero representa en la realidad una forma de expresión de la manera de vivir, la palabra dignidad. Ellos recobraron este concepto de dignidad en una medida importante, yo creo, gracias a don Samuel Ruiz García, el que llaman el obispo rojo, este caminante incansable que llevó la palabra de la teología de la liberación para llegar a construir, y esto también es otro desarrollo que ellos logran, desarrollar lo que ahora conocemos como la teología indígena. Es decir, don Samuel Ruiz no solo dio el paso al frente con la teología de la liberación, sino que aportó fundamental para crear la teología india. Vemos cómo en estos 20 años han logrado construir la utopía en una realidad objetiva.
Verónica Cruz es defensora de los derechos humanos de las mujeres en México. Ella habla de la acción deliberada de los centros de poder mexicanos para hacer invisible el movimiento zapatista.
Es totalmente deliberado que los medios de comunicación, por supuesto, totalmente del lado de lo gubernamental, tienen esa consigna, y de hecho bastante a gusto, de no lo hacen cómodamente, de no difundir lo que hoy es el zapatismo, de no traducirle a la sociedad entera lo que hoy el zapatismo está significando para los zapatistas y fundamentalmente para Chiapas. Al contrario, cuando tienen la oportunidad de desacreditar, eso es a lo que se han dedicado. Y por supuesto que las radios comunitarias y los grupos alternativos son los únicos que hacen una difusión del zapatismo, o el zapatismo vía sus propios medios, que por supuesto no son los masivos del país. Pero sí, eso es real, o sea, los medios masivos de comunicación están haciendo todo un control de la comunicación en México, y además es real. México hoy está mucho con este nuevo gobierno, con este nuevo PRI, por supuesto que la represión está todo lo que da, no solo con las radios comunitarias, con los defensores de derechos humanos también, con las mujeres en particular, con las organizaciones y con los grupos organizados que estamos tratando de construir nuevas opciones de sociedad, de reconstruir esta sociedad. Por supuesto que hay una represión brutal, deliberada, y lo menos son los medios de comunicación masivos que aplastan cualquier iniciativa para que no se conozca en el resto del país. Eso es real, eso estamos viviendo hoy en México, no es secreto de nadie, así como los periodistas sigue siendo uno de los países, o está a la cabeza, uno de los países donde el periodismo se ejerce con alto riesgo, al igual que otros países del mundo. Sí, eso es real, eso está pasando hoy en México, y estas cosas la gente no las conoce vía los medios masivos de comunicación, que están fundamentalmente controlados por el gobierno, por este nuevo gobierno priista, que lo único que quiere decirle a la sociedad es que ellos están haciendo con sus máximas reformas actuales, que con eso va a cambiar el país. Pero la gente de a pie, la gente común y corriente, sabemos, y sobre todo la gente que trabajamos con la gente, sabemos que no, que México hoy está peor que nunca.
Recordamos a nuestros oyentes que este segmento sobre los aniversarios de independencia de Haití, de la Revolución Cubana y el levantamiento zapatista son la continuación de un programa especial que transmitimos el día de ayer, 31 de diciembre de 2013.
Aprendimos a quererte desde la histórica.
En este 1 de enero, la ciudad de Santiago de Cuba fue el escenario de la celebración del 55 aniversario de la Revolución Cubana, que comenzara en 1959 como un reto al paradigma socioeconómico impuesto por Estados Unidos en América Latina. De nuevo, Edmundo García, periodista independiente y presentador del programa radial La Tarde Se Mueve, transmitido en Miami, Florida.
Yo creo que Cuba va a seguir junto a las mentes más lúcidas de la nación, tratando de buscar, de conseguir, a pesar de todos esos elementos que tú mencionas, de opresión, de bloqueo, de cerco, de persecución, va a seguir buscando el ideal, primero que todo, de conservar la soberanía y de defender esa soberanía a cualquier precio, que es el ideario, no solo de Fidel, pero aunque es de Fidel, es el ideario que viene de los grandes próceres del siglo XIX cubano. El pueblo cubano que enfrenta nuevos tiempos, pero también sabiendo lo que está en juego y lo que se está empeñando. Cuba y la Revolución Cubana han sobrevivido ya no son solo 55 años, han sobrevivido a la injerencia, a los ataques, a los bloqueos, a los intentos de asesinato, a las medidas crueles por parte del gobierno norteamericano, y Cuba ha sobrevivido a 11 administraciones norteamericanas y a 6 papas. No, no porque tenga connotación religiosa, pero ahí realmente hay un apoyo popular. Hoy Raúl Castro, en Santiago de Cuba, acaba de hablar, acaba de reafirmar los principios de soberanía de Cuba, incluso acaba de lanzar un mensaje a la nación donde los que tratan de imponer desde el punto de vista foráneo modelos neoliberales para tratar de dividir a la dirección histórica del país, de las nuevas generaciones, van a enfrentar el combate en el terreno de las ideas. O sea, en Cuba hay una profundización del pensamiento, hay una evolución, hay un proceso de actualización del modelo económico, pero además, hoy mismo Raúl acaba de ratificar hace unos minutos que Cuba además se irá replanteando el socialismo posible, el que realmente se puede llevar a cabo cada periodo de 5 años, pero sin hacer concesiones. Finalmente terminó diciendo, Cuba no tiene compromisos con nadie, solo con su pueblo. Yo creo que lo que habría que destacar, salía hoy en algunos medios de prensa, es la lucidez, la presencia física, intelectual y teórica de Fidel en el proceso revolucionario de Cuba. Por otra parte, darle un saludo a tu radioescucha y desearles un feliz 2014.
En cuanto a la suerte que corriera el expresidente de Haití, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, y las tropas de ocupación de Naciones Unidas, el activista puertorriqueño Vicente Panamá Alba dice:
la ONU se ha desplegado y ha demostrado ser una fuerza en colaboración con la globalización internacional y los intereses de los grandes poderes en el mundo. Aristide fue electo por el pueblo haitiano, no estaba protegiendo los intereses de imperios como los Estados Unidos y de las transnacionales, y lo sacaron, y la ONU fue ahí a impulsar eso.
El escritor venezolano Luis Brito García concluye diciendo que Haití deberá cumplir su papel en la historia como una nación libre en el Caribe. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Radio. Music should be free, and so should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi.
This is Jello Biafra.
Radioactive.
This is Boots Riley from the Coup.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls.
Hello there, this is Tom Morello.
Peace be still, this is Azeem checking in from Oakland, California.
This is Jim Page.
Yo, what the deal, this is Immortal Technique.
This is so-and-so from 15.
This is Michelle Shuck.
This is Mike Park.
This is Thomas from Striking New Era.
And whenever I'm running from the police, I gotta find out where to go. I listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Freak Radio.
Freak Radio.
Has been successfully flying the skull and crossbones for the past 10 years.
Amen! FM-a-lujah!
Freak Radio Santa Cruz is a vital part of this country's independent media.
Santa Cruz live stream online at www.freakradio.org.
Music should be free, so should radio.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Power and Politics of Poetry. Sorry about that pause that was going on. We had an old show playing, but we're in the studio now. Shout out to my mama who's listening. Love you. We're in the studio today. I'm your host, El Siete, and
I'm T-Rock.
And we're in the studio with a very special poet today. By Tash is the name that we're going to call this poet today. Say hello, Tash.
Hi, everybody.
I'm really excited because I've known Tash for some time. I first met them during organizing on campus. Mm-hmm. We showed up at like a few meetings, and I didn't really get to know you. And then recently, I got to see more and more of you. And then you went away for some time, like what is it, 7 weeks? And I was like,
yeah,
I miss Tash.
Weeks.
And I realized how much I appreciated you as a person. And I'm going to turn off this light that's blinding me in the face. And so I know you don't read or share your poetry, and I'm really excited to...
What?
To
yeah. I've, like, pretty much only read my poetry to probably 4 people, which are the people who live with me, and then Chris here, Lil Siete.
It's exciting.
So
the stuff that's about to be read is new to everybody who's listening. Stuff that hasn't really been put out there. That's exciting.
No, no. It's also not political. It's super... My poetry is like a feelings cafe. And it's cryptic as hell. And it wasn't intentionally written to be spoken about. It's just...
Okay.
Just that cathartic experience that we all get when we write poetry.
El Siete made the point earlier that just the fact that you're writing is political.
Mm.
Cool.
But before we do that, I feel like there are some things that we have to acknowledge and talk about for this show, which is...
We have brought some people to talk about.
It is called Hunger for Justice. This is like the other side of my life. It's all coming together.
For those of you who don't know, Tash is a really dope, committed, dedicated, and very consistent organizer, and is putting a lot of work right now in your local Santa Cruz prison abolition organization known as Sin Barras, which is without prison bars. And do you want to tell us a little bit more about the organization and the events that are going on?
Yeah, definitely. So, for those of you who were listening in last week, our friend Courtney, who is also from Sin Barras, came, and she talked about the hunger strike and what's going on in California with those in solitary confinement, how it's state-sanctioned torture, how people arbitrarily get sent there every day for really under no rules of evidence. And so... the hunger strikers, which are those who are in the security housing units, are resuming their hunger strike. This means that they're not eating. They're just entered into their third week of not eating to win these five demands from the California Department of Corrections and supposed rehabilitation. So what's happening here in Santa Cruz is that last we heard that there are at least 37 prisoners who are also hunger striking at Santa Cruz County Jail to protest their conditions. And this Wednesday, July 31st, is an international day of action called Hunger for Justice, where those inside and organizers outside and community members and loved ones outside are encouraging everyone to participate in a one-day or rolling fast on Wednesday and have a demonstration in their local town. So we're doing one in Santa Cruz this Wednesday. We're meeting at the clock tower at 6:30 p.m. Please bring your loved ones, noisemakers, candles. We just lost someone to the hunger strike. So it's pretty devastating. Bring your banners, bring your signs. We're going to make some noise and spread some love.
Yeah, I think it's really important that folks realize that a lot of attention isn't going to...
And coming up next, a bit late on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the first show of the year, January 2nd, 2014, for Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And stay with me. I'll be with you as long as my voice holds out.
It's a question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? morning, I was awoken by a man with a hand on. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be who owns the land.
The Land by Five. The song is Land. And it's the, as mentioned before, 2nd of January. And I'm talking to you from the studio of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we still have it, amazingly enough. But we are in debt, and we need to be able to kick up enough funds to pay our landlord so we can continue to be here. Not only that, we need a place to transmit from. We actually have a transmitter up temporarily, but that is a very temporary situation. If you like what you're hearing on the radio now, start looking around and giving us some ideas about where we might place a transmitter. There are many, many possibilities. Anything with a second story or a tree in the Santa Cruz area, just slightly out of the, I think it's the Pacific Avenue trough area. But any place that you can think of that even might have an offer of such a use would be great for us. Go to freakradio.org, leave us a message, or give me a call on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 831-423-4833. 423-HUFF. And way. That'll be a good way to go. And that'll be way cool. So I've got a lot of radio interviews that have been stacking up over the last month, which often happens. Plus, I haven't been feeling in tip-top shape. I'm kind of fighting off a cold, sore throat, whatever the heck it is, I usually get around this time. Dosing myself with tea and trying to still come to you and bring you the thrilling interviews which you've become so accustomed to and love so much. Or maybe find interesting and can tolerate and even may even respond to by calling into the studio. That is a possibility. If you want to call in, the number here is 831-427-3772. 831-427-FRSC. If you happen to have a phone that still has little letters on it, which I guess most do these days. 831-427-3772 if you want to call in. If you have updates of any nature, we will take updates because we are primarily a community station. My show focuses on homeless civil rights and police abuse and local problems of lack of political transparency and so forth. But whatever we got, if it has to do with breaking news here, please do call in. That can interrupt our show. That's our policy. That's what we're here for, to serve the community, as well as to put our own little thingies out there on the air. So, let's begin with some interviews from a few days ago. I think we're talking December 29th, and this would be, let's see, today's the 2nd, I think it would be Monday, 9th, 30th, no, I guess it would be Sunday. So these are some interviews right after my last show, if my dating is correct, which it usually is, but is not always. So let's see, whatever the date, here comes some interviews for you, and for your thoughts, for your response, for your agreement, disagreement, whatever you got.
So I'm outside New Leaf Market. It's Sunday the 29th, about 20 to 4. The downtown Santa Cruz shopping kiosk is open. There's a New Leaf Community Market sign outside on the sidewalk. No one is at the usual area where people, musicians, would previously be playing. But, now wait, here's Musical Mike. He's out here. Mike, what's shaking? Are you downtown again? What's going on here?
Valerie Christie, that's who I'm looking for. She didn't show up at the Bomber's big feed on Christmas.
You gotta get in touch with her. She wants to see you, I think. But, are you playing downtown again? You were driven away by ticket mass monsters, weren't you?
Ticket monsters. Oh, Robert, you're just predictable.
Well, this is very true.
Which isn't all bad, you know? It's like, you know, you just, people gotta know who people are so we can all.
I will leave you as you deface the area around this poor tree, but I'm not gonna inform on you. So Mike is actually sitting
there. We're on the street.
Well, whatever we make it is the word I'm saying. Robert, anything new from your neck of the woods?
Not too much going on. I don't know. Any chance of returning, getting any of your vehicles back?
Yeah, I had to put that away for a while. I was starting to have heart problems and a little...
Getting to you.
Yeah, I just had to drop everything for a while and, you know, you can't fight anything dead, right?
No, I guess not. Although some say people are worth... Some are worth more dead than alive. Butchie Baker is for instance, our police sergeant.
Anything new on Officer Havy and the towing of homeless cars?
No, I haven't heard anything more, but if you hear anything, I know he was reportedly harassing people up on the west side for a while, and then I'm not sure what the next story is or was. I heard tales of officers downtown, CSOs, one particular CSO, harassing vendors. With strange stories about needing permits for selling, of needing to have both licensing and also a permit, a state permit, a city permit. Mm-hmm. Never heard such a thing, but that's apparently the claim.
Just for a little street vending, huh?
Well, I mean, it's... Apparently, I'm told they put it into a flyer. I'm going to try and grab this couple before they leave, though. But
people at the flea market, they need all these permits?
I think a flea market is an exception, but you also have to... I don't know what the story is, in honesty. And again, we've been talking with...
Robert Brunette.
Thank you, Mr. Brunette. Give me a quick story. What's going on before you left?
We were right here.
Crystal, you're pointing to an area in front of New Leaf near the corner. I mean, for River 21 near the corner.
We were right here, and they told us to move down, so I moved right here. And they said, I got to move down. So I moved all the way over there. And then they said, no, go back over there. So then I just moved right where I was
at. All these spots are illegal because they are within, actually, you have to be 14 feet away from the crosswalk and from the building and from the trash can.
Yeah.
So I think I tried to call. Your number's been disconnected.
Off, yeah. We haven't been able to pay our bills.
I've been threatened that next time I'm out here selling my art, I'm going to be arrested. So a week before Christmas until now, I haven't been able to sell my jewelry. So I'm broke. We got kicked out of the motel we've been staying in.
We paid to sleep on his floor, and we didn't get to sleep because they partied all night.
Understandably. But tonight you're having motel-less problems, yes?
Yeah. Yep, because I can't sell my fucking art out here and make any fucking money. And the city is laughing about it. They don't even... I'm kind of fed up with this whole thing. So.
I apologize for the... Not for the city. I didn't do it. But
no,
we talked. We talked to Kate today, who's up in Oakland. And
she did leave? I didn't get her number before she left.
On Christmas, I have her number.
Oh, yeah?
In the phone, yeah.
What we're talking about here is... apparently a very particular form of harassment from a very particular officer. I think it's Barnett. Not Burnett, but actually the last speaker who I talked to along with a musical Mike, or Merriweather Mike as I sometimes call him, across the street. He's been struggling to get his vehicle back and unsuccessful at that. This is another Barnett, a CSO Barnett, who is... been putting particular pressure on scarf seller Kate, who we talked to from now in Oakland. She's been driven out of town. You may have seen her downtown. She's a sort of a friendly, jovial woman with a lot of yarn, working on scarves and selling them. And she was driven away by Barnett's insistence that he will be ticketing her if he sees her again downtown. We're going to hear more, a little bit more about that from Crystal and David, who were also harassed for their showing their jewelry and their stones, which they were, they describe as crafts and their own artwork that they do. The actual ordinance that they are using, I found out by researching it, because I looked at one of the citations that David got. I don't have the fine, actually, but it's, I would guess, somewhere between $200 and $400 is my guess. In any case, you know, that's no small amount of money for people who are struggling. But the actual code section is 5.04045 municipal code, which requires a $72 daily fee for vendors, peddlers, or jobbers. Something that I don't think anybody on Pacific Avenue isn't doing in some sort of hefty, ongoing, serious, high-volume commercial business could afford. Disabled veterans are exempted from this. So, according to this municipal code section, any honorably discharged soldier, sailor, or marine from the military or naval services who is unable to earn a livelihood by manual labor and who hawks, peddles, or vends any kind of goods in the city, provided that he shall have obtained in advance a written permission issued by a veteran service officer of the County of Santa Cruz and a written permit from the city manager. Those may be high bars. I've not actually ever seen such a permission granted by the city manager or a permit granted by the city council, either to a veteran or to anybody else who's a sort of a street vendor. But, you know, I don't see everything, so maybe not. There is another exception is occasional transactions, and this is the... apparently the section of the law that was referred to by both Kate and the couple, David and Crystal, who we hear talking now, mentioning that persons engaging in business during no more than 5 calendar days in any fiscal year, which is the year that starts June 30th and ends July 1st, have not of a fixed place of business, come to the city for the purpose of transacting business, not exempt the business tax, occasional transactions. Well, I don't have the entire section cited here. My understanding is that you can do it, like, I think 5 or 6 times inside of... business during no more than 5 calendar days. So you can only do it on 5 different days, according to this. But I was also told by somebody else this has to do with yard sales. And again, I'm not getting clear information. All I know is that whatever the law reads, and this is an old law, it's from years ago, it has not been enforced for decades in any clear way, or if it has been enforced, I haven't heard about it, provided the person says this is for donation, unless, of course, it's your own written or artistic artwork, and for some reason crafts have not yet been held to be in that category, but paintings and writings are, so it's a strange situation. But if you're doing painting, paintings or writings, that cannot be you can't be required to get a permit for that kind of stuff. And you can, you are allowed to put a price tag on it. The other stuff, it's traditionally been allowed to offer it for donation, and people donate what they want. And sometimes, I mean, in the past, some police officers have been cruel, and they said, oh, we're going to take all this stuff and we'll give you virtually nothing. It doesn't happen much. I've heard it threatened by police officers, but not done, and not so much, not at all recently. So I don't want to, you know, give police a badder rap than they already have on Pacific Avenue. Let's hear some more. Again, we're listening to December 29th, conversation on the corner of right across the street from New Leaf in front of Forever 21, where David and Crystal are upset. They were about to leave, and I had a conversation with them as to why they were leaving the space they were in.
Have you seen the CSOs out today?
Yeah, there's one.
No. Oh, yes, there is. There's two. There's the girl, and then there's the dude.
She calls him Officer Swastika. That's Officer Barnett.
No, he's not here today.
Oh, he's not?
No, I haven't seen him yet today. So I'm pretty sure that if he was here today, and we've been out for about 2 hours, so I'm sure that he would have come and made his presence known. He's been coming by my sign that I've been flying.
Which says? You're whipping out your sign.
Yeah. It says, need a little help. The police would rather have me beg than be able to sell my art. We only have First Amendment rights 6 days out of the year in Santa Cruz.
And what the FSSS will do. You don't have.
And the irony, of course, is that panhandling is legal all year round, and you can do it as many times as you want, provided you stick within the very strict guidelines that essentially eliminate the First Amendment after dark. That eliminated 95% of the sidewalk, that eliminated in various other ways that have nothing to do with aggressive or abusive panhandling. It's actually illegal to hold up a sign, need cash or need food after dark. That's a crime punishable first by hundreds of dollars and as an infraction fine, and a second offense up to, it's a year in jail and $1,000 fine, or maybe 6 months in jail. It's a misdemeanor. So it's their irony is, though, that they were not allowed to sell their jewelry or to offer it for a donation, but they were allowed to have a sign up that begged for money. This is the degradation of homeless people in a very, very visible way. And it's a very overt sort of thing that is going on here, and it's really very disgusting and enraging, really. I'm a little too tired this evening to feel much rage, but it's bunch of horseshit.
Flyer that shows the supposed new law, which I our
they
old
have
law.
It right there, I think, at the information booth.
Oh, I'll have to go get it.
Yeah.
Yesterday, this guy I just met, he was stepping on his dog's leash and not actually like holding it.
Yeah, Barnett.
And
Barnett came up to give someone playing music, which they were in a totally good spot. Okay, and the reason he was going to give them a ticket was because his dog's leash was wrapped around his ankle, and he said that he wasn't in control of his dog, but he was, okay? Yeah. And when he went to pick up the leash, Barnett stepped on the leash and said, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have had my phone out with the camera.
You still have that video?
Yeah, I do. I have a couple videos.
So anyway, I guess there's no way you can email it to me? Or
I might be able to. Yeah, I got Wi-Fi on my phone. Like, if I can find a signal somewhere,
and then the CSO came back up to him and said, hey, I'm going to write you another ticket if you don't take a break or move down the line, because you can only play music an hour at a time.
Something else I got to add. Today...
Before you say this,
yeah.
Did you two see this or did you hear about it?
Yeah, we were there.
Okay. I have made a point to come over and tell that dude, hey, if he tries taking you to jail, I'll babysit your pup.
Yeah. Okay.
But today... one of the CSOs came up because we were panhandling in an inappropriate area, supposedly. And she came up to tell us to move, and I told her, I said, you know, we don't bother you guys. We don't bother citizens. We're very respectful and everything, and I'm tired of being harassed. And her and the other person that she was with said, harassment? These are just rules. And I said, no, I've been being harassed. And they're all like, well, who is it that's been harassing you? And as soon as I said, Barnett, they both looked at each other and they said, well, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm sure there's been a lot of complaints and a lot of shit going on with because of Barnett. He's going above and beyond the Call of Duty to mess with people. He's pointing out all these little laws that don't really, you know, no one else is enforcing it. There's not one other CSO that is, or even the hospitality, which, you know, that's another thing. I wish I could come out here with a video camera and follow them a day in the shoes of a hospitality employee for the city, because it's a crapshoot, okay? These people come around and they talk to people, okay? It's supposed to be the other way around. People are supposed to come up to them and ask them if they have a question. Hey, where is this? Your information, help me out. No, the information go around and harass the street musician.
No, not our hospitality people.
They do the hospitality.
How can I believe that?
I would. I'm going to save up my money and get a camera just so I can follow these city employees around and make a case to the city and just show them how useless and how much money they're all wasting.
I work right across the street, which I don't want to say just because. And I stand outside all day and, you know, do my thing and. If people come up to me and ask me directions, and I've also had people come up to me and say, hey, what's up with those Gestapos? Do you know where this place is? You know what I mean? They don't want
you to don't
go
even
to
get
them.
Paid to give instructions.
Yeah, right. Just kind, friendly person that's just, yes, I know where that is, or no, you know, and I've asked a few people, like, I know that they're political because I've talked to them before, and I was like, how come you don't ask, you know, those people? Oh, because they're fucking pieces of shit that boss people around and don't even they don't even do a job. They just walk around all day and fucking Gestapo people and fucking bullshit all day long. I wish I could get paid to bullshit and walk around and fucking.
Maybe you can join the hospitality crowd.
Oh, yeah. Then
you wouldn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
She gets very hostile and very aggressive and very physical.
No, I haven't come out for a while.
Keep my eye out for you.
Yeah.
Do you have your tickets, the ones that they gave you?
Yeah.
You got ticketed twice, you were telling me?
Yeah, I've gotten two tickets, and there's one space in between the days. So I got a ticket. I didn't come out with my jewelry, and then the next day I came back out and I got another ticket.
What was the nature of the ticket?
Vending without a business license.
Let me see this so-called citation. I'm going to check it out.
Oh, no, I've never actually had a citation. I just got ticketed.
Oh, no.
I haven't had a citation.
I would like to say one more thing.
That's what I mean by ticket.
When the dude tried to take his dog leash and just, he was saying, he said, you know, fuck you, I'm leaving, and we tried to take his dog leash, he called, like, the other police officers, and the other police officers got here, the Burnett said his story, and the other dude said his story, and the cop came up to him and said, hold on, you can't give him a full-on ticket, you need to start with a citation, all right, and you just need to give him his name so we can hurry up out of here.
So he meant a warning, maybe.
Yeah, no, because I guess there's like a level of things. Yes, there's the warning, and then there's the citation that says, like, hey, you know, this is on file. If you do it again, then I can give you a ticket, which is a court date. And then if you keep getting your tickets, then they can take you to jail. You know, and there is a difference between a citation
somebody
and a...
Did tell you this, or are you...
I've dealt with
your experience, as you've seen.
Yes. And
that's not my understanding.
And that's what the cop said, too.
And actually, I don't think this is the case, and I think the tickets that David got, the Crystal's boyfriend, are tickets. They are citations. It's the same thing. And they require going to court or paying a huge, what's called bail, not because they'll put you in jail if you don't do the bail, but because that's the only way to avoid court. And if you don't avoid court, it goes to a failure to pay, and the failure to pay then goes to a collection agency, and the collection agency then... has implications. It informs the courts, and after a number of such citations, they start garnishing your funds, your bank account. They attack your credit rating, and misdemeanor charges can be filed against you independently for failure, three unintended infractions, plus all additional infractions after the first three. If the three happened in a 6-month period, are treated as misdemeanors, that is to say, punishable by up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine. That's the Don Lane Hillary Bryant law, the same Hillary Bryant that so effusively praised by our fellow activist Steve Plaich in letters to both the Santa Cruz Weekly and the Santa Cruz Sentinel over the holidays. I'm sorry, I just had to mention that one again. Getting back to David and Crystal on December 29th.
explain. You said, first of all, you need to start with a citation, not a ticket.
This one is the first.
Thank you. Well, we're looking at a ticket now, 5.04.090 Municipal Code Business License, Officer Barnett. And this is a ticket on 18th of December. Here's another one. It's on the 20th of December, again, 5.04.090 or 080. It's a little unclear. 090 it must be. Again, Pacific and Walnut, both the Pacific and Walnut. And this is it's neither misdemeanor nor non-traffic, nor traffic. Nothing is boxed up here. This, however, is cited as non-traffic. Again, it's all new to me. I've never seen such a citation before. Interesting enough.
I was looking on the internet and stuff, trying to like look up this whole you're only allowed to be out here 6 days.
Right.
Supposedly there was a law put in action a couple years ago by the city council, and it's regarding garage sailing.
Yes.
Garage sales. You're only allowed to have six garage sales a year.
A lot of tweakers would buy clothes and then sell them for more.
I make jewelry.
Or they just said they want to fuck with garage sales people.
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, like that I can understand. You know, you don't put your time into, you know, other people's clothes. You know what I mean? And supposedly the whole city was like full of garage.
I think you're giving them too much credit, Crystal. But
yeah.
You might be right.
And like,
I actually like, you know, do something. And what sucks is that I actually have to pay a little bit more because I don't want to be messed with if I'm at his booth.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So I have to pay a little bit more to be a paid employee. That's what the little thing says. So, yeah, and I have to spend half my paycheck on a vending license instead of being able to spend it on a room.
I see Dave here has decided to show his stuff in spite of all these risks here at Pacific Avenue.
Yes.
Within 14 feet of a garbage can, I might add. Shockingly enough. And so I left David and Crystal actually selling some stones, which they set up illegally within 14 feet of a garbage can. Although they were initially afraid to do it. In New Leaf, where, as I said, I think when I approached the woman behind the counter, she asked for a coin to use the bathroom, which I've done numerous times in the past. And of course, I'm a regular customer here. She demanded to know, or requested to know, if I was going to be buying some... Was I a customer here? And I said...
No, it wasn't was I a customer here. It was I buying something today, I believe, was either the force of what she was saying or the words she was using. I wanted to correct myself on that. Never before had this happened to me I presume that such coins go to customers, but since I'm a pretty regular customer, a New Leaf, in spite of myself, I figured I wasn't going to have any kind of difficulty, but perhaps my hairy appearance and the fact that this employee, maybe a new employee, and she was on her guard against these street ragamuffins, which I don't want to think I resemble, but maybe I do.
I have my mind about that. Hey there. Okay. I make up my mind about that after I got back from the bathroom. She said, "We only give them to customers." And I said, and she handed me one, perhaps somewhat abashed. But I realized, of course, my hair is long and I'm sort of in a fairly grubby set of jeans. And that, I wondered if that impacted her rap, whether she would say that to a man in a business suit. So we're talking with...
Oh, my God, is this being recorded?
I'm just recording it now. You had an encounter with the New Leaf security guard at one point.
I did. I was actually heading to yoga. And he saw me as I parked here because I wasn't aware that I was supposed to not park in this parking space. I thought we had, this was fine. People could just park here because it's a community store. And he saw me and he's like, "You've been parked here for an hour." And I'm like, "I just got out of my car a couple seconds ago."
Which was true.
Yeah, my friend was with me. My best friend was with me. And we were heading to yoga, you know, to be peaceful, to work on our bodies, to work on our minds, to work on spirituality, aside from other stuff we do. And he literally, he was being really mean. And it didn't matter what I told him. He's like, you know, so I got to the yoga studio, and I literally, my nerves were up, and I was shaking, and I ended up crying. So I got to the yoga studio and I cried because he kept saying that I was here, I was parking illegal, that I've been here for more than an hour, and that wasn't true. He saw me when I got out of my car.
Is this the same security guard? Have you been inside the New Leaf today?
Yeah.
Same guy is inside today?
No, it was a different one. Every time I see him, he brings back, like, weird memories. Like, I see him, and I'm like, wow, you were the security guard who was a fucking asshole to me. I mean, I don't understand why there's security guys at New Leaf. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why? I mean, people talk about people stealing, but I've never seen it. So if I've never seen it, I'm assuming it doesn't happen.
Well, I'm sure there's some petty theft from New Leaf, but I've never, you know, the idea that everyone should now be treated as a criminal, that you should be required to ask for, to announce you're a customer and prove you're a customer or assert you're a customer before they give you a key or a coin to go into the bathroom is degrading, abusive, uncomfortable, certainly, at least. And I also am aware of various problems in the past with New Leaf. New Leaf supported the anti-homeless, anti-street performer ordinances.
Actually, I was really bummed about that. I'm bummed about the fact that if this city lives from tourism, we get a lot of money from tourism, but it seems like we're always broke. So if we get a lot of tourists, I'm assuming that these tourists, when they have kids or when they're with their families, they need to go to the bathroom. So it just doesn't make any sense for them to say that you have to buy something when your child is about to pee and he's like needs to go to the bathroom. Like, you need to be able to have that bathroom available for people.
How else can we finance our services?
Right? I mean, you could get sick if you don't pee or go to the bathroom. It's just, it's essential. And I personally, I loved it in Santa Cruz when we had all the street performers, you know, people coming from different towns and just selling their jewelry, their arts, their prints, their food, their jams, like all that kind of stuff. It's just amazing. And it really sucks. I don't know what we are turning into, honestly. It seems like it just seems like the city's very contradictable. I mean, they're trying to get more tourists out here, but you can't really park here. I mean, I don't know. It's just, it really pisses me off.
I'm glad. It should piss you off. We've been talking with? Say who you are. You can say whatever you want.
I you know what? I'm going to keep it anonymous until I figure it out.
Okay. Thank you. Anonymous one.
And that's interesting because this is an outspoken woman who I met a week ago who is involved with another one of the local TV and radio stations. And the fact that she feels uncomfortable about saying who she is to speak her mind, and she's a pretty feisty person, says to me that, again, this darkness that we began to enter, I don't know, seems like a long time ago, but certainly more recently in the last year with all the downtown ordinance changes, the arrival of security guards and cops and thugs patrolling the library and new attacks on homeless people from official groups that should know better and destruction of needle exchange, all this stuff there's sort of a cloud of intimidation that is descending here. And I find it kind of ironic in a way, and it contrasts to some extent with what's happening nationally. Although I don't think things are getting any better, you know, necessarily nationally along a lot of lines. We have seen, you know, nationally public opinion of protests turn back the bombing of Syria, stop the bombing, halt the potential bombing of Iran, at least for the time being. We have seen, to some extent, I don't know how, I mean, there's the bombing is, and the droning is still going on in Pakistan and Afghanistan, but there is increasing negative public opinion around this issue. And, of course, the infamous NSA spying scandal, which was courageously revealed by Edward Snowden, and previous hackers who revealed other criminal behaviors by those in authority, who, of course, still haven't been charged, or even the, you know, much less the criminality stopped. The collateral murder video of 2007, which Chelsea Manning revealed. These are indications of significant impact and pressure on the power structure. I mean, it seems to me. I've been feeling gloomy because I look at, you know, the fact that a relative handful of people, that's a little exaggerated, but it's the smallest DIY demonstration we've ever had on New Year's Eve. two nights ago. And it ended very, very quickly. In fact, it seemed to be ended by people who were inside the demonstration itself, the drummers, who pulled off the street and parked themselves in front of O'Neill's and encouraged everybody to leave the street before almost the celebrating had begun, which was, certainly violated the traditions of the DIY parade, and I don't understand why it was done, except that it was a very small parade. It was a cold night, but... there are indications one way and another, but in Santa Cruz itself, I do see some courageous activists standing up. For example, he's tooting my horn a lot, John Colby, who and his sister Pat are publishing a couple of websites, Citizens for a Positive Change, Citizens for Transparent Accountable Government. I believe that's what it's called. I probably have it slightly wrong. And seeking through Public Records Act requests and Freedom of Information Act requests to expose government malfeasance against homeless people, disabled people, poor people, and doing so in a very out front way in spite of pretty vicious harassment, at least if you believe their accounts to be correct, from not just from online trolls, but from the authorities where they were living before at the Mission Housing, John Stewart Company. Again, I got to admit, I've not spoken to the John Stewart Company to get their side of events and so forth. But I'm impressed with the willingness of some people to stand up and speak out and to try to demand the documents that will give people a foothold. There's a new thing being pushed around or proposed by John Colby called guerrilla advocacy, by which we talk about the kind of guerrilla, not the... sort of underground guerrilla, where you pit one authority against another in order to have the larger guerrilla get on your side, even if she doesn't want to do that. And you do that by involving groups like the Department of Justice and other, other national authorities. It's a little risky, and I think it's also rather idealistic in some respects, because I don't know how much you can actually force that to happen. But I think that the business of publicizing stuff and getting it out there and then indicating through channels it's not happening sets the stage for whatever needs to happen next. And we saw some of there's also an interesting article on Counterpunch, the website I regularly look at, talking about the many stages of change that often seem to be, one can be rather easily discouraged by, for example, the Occupy movement, flowering and growing strong and then getting repressed and seemingly disappearing, at least in terms of visible encampments. And that does discourage me. And I don't like the idea that, now they're all becoming Democratic Party politicians, or they're all going to be working to, through political channels to get stuff done and deal with local foreclosures. And there are some groups that are working around that. But, it is also true that the massive street presence is not there, and indeed the Occupy movement in Santa Cruz no longer meets, at least in regular time frame that it used to, every Saturday at the main post office. Although Food Now Bombs has grown stronger and is feeding regularly once a week and is talking about doing a second meal. And the point is that Food Now Bombs isn't just, free food once or twice a week. I mean, the Homeless Lack of Services Center does that twice a day, at least, I think, 5 days a week, and maybe on Saturday and Sunday there are also meals out there. But Food Not Bombs is a group that is raising the issue of food, not bombs. And it's a group concerned with basic human rights and the local denial of human rights, as well as the national priorities that deny human rights. So there are positive indications there. I'm not sure what to think, by cracky. And what do you think? Give me a call, 831-427-3772. Should we be optimistic about the new year just because the calendar has turned and we're supposed to jump up and down and say, New Year's, whoopee-doo, that sort of thing? Or should we be depressed? Or should we just be sort of, we've seen it all before, here it is again. What's your feeling about this? Give me a call, 427-3772. And while I'm waiting for that, let's hear a little of the vanilla satire from the Capitol Steps and its album Fiscal Shades of Gray. Good evening, I'm Jim Lehrer. As you may recall, I moderated the first of the presidential debates, and many on the left compared my performance to that of replacement NFL referees. So we're here tonight to kind of lighten the mood after such a contentious election season to have a joke-telling contest between the two former candidates. I'd like to welcome them out now, Governor Mitt Romney and President Barack Obama. Mr. President, I know you have a lot of campaign debts to pay. We're sorry we had to trick you to come back by saying it was a Hollywood fundraiser.
Jim, that's okay. I've actually raised a little over $9 million tonight anyway. While I was in the green room, I went through Mitt Romney's pockets.
Mr. Romney, as you may know, some of the post-election polls show that both you and Mr. Obama polled behind a third choice, none of the above. Some of the people said they didn't like your personality.
Well, that's highly insulting. I don't have a personality.
Well, we've allotted each of the candidates 90 seconds to tell the same joke. So to determine the order, we're going to flip a coin. Mr. Romney, heads or tails?
What's a coin? Is that one of those government handouts that 47% of Americans feel entitled to? Hey, this isn't being recorded, is it? Okay.
Mr. Obama, we'll start with you.
Wait, before you ask me that question, will someone turn on my teleprompter? Go ahead.
All right, here we go. Mr. Obama, the first joke is, why did the chicken cross the road?
Well, Jim, first, let me say, this chicken could not have crossed the road on his own. That road was built with stimulus money. And if the chicken laid an egg while crossing that government-funded road, I'd say to that chicken, you didn't build that egg. You had some help. So I appreciate this opportunity to explain my position on this chicken. Now, Mr. Romney's attacks on my chicken statements have made me very angry. Jim, I'm sorry for that outburst. But one more thing. Perhaps the chicken crossed the road because he was afraid to release his tax returns. Perhaps the chicken crossed the road to get to the Cayman Islands.
That's my kind of chicken.
Mr. Romney, same question. Why did the chicken cross the road?
I've had one position on this chicken all along. Did the chicken cross the road? Yes. Did it get to the other side? No. Do we know why it crossed the road? Yes. Do we know why it never got to the other side? No. I don't think I can be any clearer than that.
Mr. Obama, you have 30 seconds for a rebuttal.
Well, let me say that if Mr. Romney had his way, this chicken wouldn't be able to cross the road at all. He'd be outsourced to India. And the only reason he'd be crossing the road is to become chicken tandoori.
Hey, wait a minute. I love chickens. In fact, I love all birds. I mean, I have friends who own the Baltimore Ravens, the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Atlanta Hawks.
Okay. Mr. Romney, let's forge on to the next joke, shall we? Say, how many Democrats do you believe it would take to change a light bulb?
You'd need three. You'd need one to approve a $535 million grant to a startup company to develop a new light bulb. You'd need one to flush that grant down the drain. And you'd need Bill Clinton to take 3 hours to explain how they had inherited the previously faulty light bulb and that no one could possibly have changed it over the last 4 years. Zing!
Mr. Obama.
Let me make myself perfectly clear. You would need three Mitt Romneys. One to change the bulb, one to take a poll on the new bulb, and one to change the bulb big based on the poll results. But I don't think Republicans would change the bulb at all, because it's obvious that they prefer to live in the dark. Oh, snap. Yeah. How do you like me now, Mitt?
Well, there you have it. I think the obvious winner of tonight's joke-telling contest is anyone with a remote control. Good night.
Yeah, I wish I had the remote control for that one. Let's continue with, and you are tuned to Free Radio, in case you just tuned in, 101.3 FM. This is a twice-weekly show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. I'll be with you till 8 o'clock. So feel free to call in if you have some bad jokes you want to pass on, hopefully some interesting news or some discussion of how it is to be out on the streets in weather that isn't really specifically freezing, but it's getting damn cold out there with no warming centers available for people and no relief really in sight.
Well, it is now December 31st, and it's around 5 to 5 on the day before the end of the year in downtown Santa Cruz. All right, we have the drum man has arrived. Sir, what is your name?
Arthur Hull.
And Arthur, I see you're carrying a drum with you. Do you have a permit for that drum?
Yes, I do.
All right, well, can you please, here comes a police officer, can you please show it to us?
Good. Here it is. Okay, well, get that on the recording. Okay.
And he, of course, gave me his middle finger.
Okay, I'm an old fart. They can arrest me. It's all right. In fact, I haven't been arrested yet, and it's about time, really.
Well, we could try to make a citizen's arrest of you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'll feel better. I did a Christmas drum circle in a cul-de-sac for a family on Christmas Eve.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, here in Santa Cruz.
Without a permit?
Yes, and I apologize at the end of the circle that we hadn't actually
been arrested
or the police didn't come and shut us down, because we're supposed
negligence
to.
Negligence that I really come to, unfortunately, expect from
really,
your kind.
It's not a successful drum circle unless the police come and shut you down. Really.
DIY parade.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
So this is your fifth parade, your tenth parade, first parade?
I did the very first one. It's remember the police drummer riot at the town clock the year before the first night? That's what initiated the first night. And so they called me up and asked me to do drum circles on this end of the mall. Okay. And
lure away.
Yeah, to lure away the drummers. And also, I said yes under the condition that I could do one in the middle of the day for the kids in the street. But we did that. And the first night was wonderful, and it was great. And when the money stopped running and the town council stopped playing with us, we continued it to this day. And we're still continuing, even though every year it gets one or two floats smaller.
I want to kind of bring back the recollection, because I was around that night too in 1993 going in 1994 when I guess it was what was the name of it? Patty Saponi, who began hitting people with her squad of people to drive them away from the town clock with her batons.
Right. Yeah. It was initiated by the police. That's eyewitness.
You were there and you saw it?
I was not there, but I talked to a lot of people because I'm part of this drumming community. I helped birth it, actually. So I talked to a lot of people, and I got five or six stories, and all of them were the same.
And that story was?
Police started.
In what way? Did you get any specifics?
They were grabbing some people. People resisted. Then the batons came out, and then it was a riot.
And this, of course, was done, as I understand it, 10 after 12, which is before the 1 o'clock closing time at the town clock at that time.
Right, but we didn't have first night. They just saw it as a bunch of hippie thunder drummers partying down at the town clock. They didn't even think about it as a first night celebration.
No, but every night, every New Year's Eve prior to that, there was a large celebration at the town clock.
Right.
And the streets were filled, just like tonight. There's no permit for what happens after the DIY parade.
No, and the police have threatened us in the newspaper that they would eventually shut us down. And I figure if there's only this drum crew left, we lead the end of the parade every year, right? They might just stop us and arrest us because we're a bunch of drummers walking in the middle of the street. But when the town is marching, they've been pretty supportive at that level for the parade anyway.
Numbers make the difference.
Numbers make the difference. You know?
Yeah, you also had incredibly mismanaged police action in other ways, too. Saponi's crew drove people downtown where they began breaking windows.
Right. yeah. A.K.A. riot. Mad people getting hit by police. There equals riot. People, you know, responding in the way that they do. I'm going to throw a rock at something, and I can't throw it at a policeman, so here we go. You know, and I'm not condoning that. I'm not saying that's right, but
that's,
you know,
that's the likely outcome.
Yeah, the fuse was there. The police lit it. The bomb went off, and then we had first night. So thank God for that, in a certain way.
I understand.
You know?
First night kind of failed because they suddenly just.
Now, to understand what happened, and probably those who have been around for 20 years do, but for those who are newcomers. Before 1990, last night, 1993, first night, 1994, there was no official downtown association celebration called First Night, which actually then began the next, I believe it was either the next year or the year after. I think it was the next year, but I'm not quite sure. But this was an attempt to sort of civilize the crowd and bring more people in and stop... you know, drummers and poor people and rowdies were blamed for what the police actually did. But then Sergeant Patty Saponi, later Lieutenant Patty Saponi, did. And I think she has a new name now. I think she got married and changed her name. Not quite sure of that. I don't think she's on the force anymore, or maybe she is. But in any case... Then for about a decade, there was First Night, and you're going to hear us talking about that. That was an official series of booths set up downtown early throughout the day and early evening. And as most everyone who has been down there knows, on New Year's Eve, as it gets closer to midnight, people show up in great numbers, you know, celebrating, often in drunken revelry, and march to the town clock and, you know, toast the new year. This whole... First Night deal was in a sort of attempt to civilize it and also commercialize it somewhat, make money off of it. And I was down there probably during those first nights. My recollection of them is not that intense at the moment. I suppose I should consult my notes. I'm sure I took notes at the time because I was around cop watching. You know, that's what I was doing a lot. Whenever there's a large crowd and I get to those events, I usually run around with either a camera or a tape recorder or some friends and witnesses, trying to keep the police honest, or at least document what they're doing in some way. You can't really keep the police honest. It's sort of not possible. By honest, I mean honestly respecting the constitutional rights of poor people. It just, that doesn't happen in this city or any other. I mean, let's be honest about that. But this is the city I'm concerned about because this is where I live, in this Santa Cruz community, if you include the broader Felton area, which I do. Anyway, as you'll hear, the first night ended because apparently they began raising their fees, and people who were coming originally just couldn't afford it. And so in 2005, on the first night, last night 2005, first night 2006, a group of people got together and organized the DIY parade, which was really just... It was quite an event the first year and the year, a couple of years after. There were hundreds of people, maybe even 1,000 people in the parade, and it lasted for hours, several hours, between, I don't know, 4:30 and 5 and 8 or 9 o'clock. People parked themselves in the street and celebrated, had pillow fights and gave speeches and danced and rode around on bicycles and lit fire barrels. None of this was destructive or violent. It was all celebratory. Although the fire crew came down to put out the fire barrel, of course. And the police prosecuted, and the city attorney prosecuted, three people for walking in the parade, as well as illegally surveilling them, I should say, repressively surveilling them. That was, I've talked about this on the air before. Now our chief of police, Kevin Vogels, he sent in undercover agents who were working on this because he thought it was going to be some sort of a evil anarchist plot. And when there was a concern by a lot of the citizenry that this was a form of repressing political organizing, which it was, he announced an investigation of it. He wasn't police chief at the time. I believe he was a lieutenant or maybe a deputy chief. And he assigned someone to investigate it, and the person he assigned was himself, the very person who organized it. And this, you know, everyone found this a find, including Mayor then Mayor Cynthia Matthews, then City Manager Dick Wilson, Assistant City Manager Martine Bernal. I don't know if he's now our City Manager, but then he was the Assistant. I don't know if he weighed in on it or not. He certainly didn't speak out against this clear. Whatever you think of police infiltrating peaceful political groups to surveil them, if there's any question about its advisability or its legality or its appropriateness, you don't send the same people who organized it and ordered it to investigate it. And of course, that's what they did. That's what, and once that's done, you don't approve that if you're the mayor and the city manager. The city manager more powerful than the mayor, with a lifetime position, really. And a $200,000 plus salary, they did. Anyway, then we had first night, and we've had this DIY parade, which has been regularly reviled in the papers, particularly last year and the year before, I believe. And indeed, three individuals: Wes Modes, Whitney Wild, and Curtis Relliford were all arrested. Not arrested; they were cited for walking in the parade without a permit. And this became an issue, of course, a month or two ago when they changed the laws regarding requirements for permits, which are now more stringent than they ever were. And it's, in a way, it's academic, because this parade never gets a permit, no matter how stringent the requirements are, how loose the requirements. They use the philosophy of the Occupy Santa Cruz folks, which is the Constitution is our permit, that the people have the right to assemble. They don't need to get the okay from the government authorities. That's exactly opposed to what they need to do. So let's hear some more of this conversation with Arthur Hull, the drummer. I have to say, and I haven't talked to him about it, I'm hopeful that he certainly said some bold words in his discussion about, he did a drum circle on Christmas Eve, and he kind of felt bad he didn't get arrested. And he, you know, he felt very angry about the brutality that happened 20 years before. And he was concerned about the shrinking numbers of people in the DIY parade. I was too. But the drummers then, maybe with under his leadership, maybe not, went off to the side and ended this event early, which I noticed. And it ended amazingly early. I mean, the parade lasted no longer than half an hour. It was amazingly short. And that happened, I think, in large part because the drummers simply moved onto the sidewalk after reaching O'Neill's. They just went immediately onto the sidewalk and stayed there. And a lot of people walked to the end of the sidewalk and then came back and all gathered on the sidewalk at O'Neill's, but not in the street. They didn't take the street anymore. And only one guy who was bouncing a big ball, and he got some play in the media. I think his name was Brian. Good for him. You know, he kept trying to maintain the tradition of this is one night when we're going to celebrate. We're not going to do business as usual. But, I'd like to see established figures like Arthur and others, you know, come to events like... The Trash Orchestra used to come to events. That's an orchestra led by Wes Modes six or seven years ago, defending the farmers market, Food Not Bombs feeding, defending the celebration that happened every Wednesday, where people came and danced in the parking lot, which was driven away first by police force and then by planting a commercial farmers market extension on top of it. And the Trash Orchestra came down and attempted to give support, as did Huff and other organizations like Food Not Bombs, to that weekly community gathering. And it was crushed eventually, or dispersed. And there is still a drum circle. It's now on the levee, and it's in back of India Joe's restaurant on the levee, as levee rules get tighter and tighter. And as far as I know, they haven't attempted to actually crush that relatively small gathering that happens along the levee path. But the point is that Arthur Hull and others who are, you know, renowned drummers, just as Tom Noddy is a renowned bubble performer, and his threat to bring people to town in 2003 persuaded the city council to do a very quick turnaround on one of their rules in the downtown ordinance, that there shall be no juggling. I mocked that at the time because it seemed like such a small victory, but Tom believed in celebrating it, and we had a big to-do, performances in Santa Cruz at the Civic Auditorium, and it was all sort of a happy-go-lucky thing, but didn't stop this wave of oppression that moved on. We made money, and we still have a fund for those who are interested in fighting back against the tax on street performers. But street performers are notoriously reluctant to organize themselves. They are. A ditto with homeless folks. And seems to be ditto with lots of people in this community in terms of coming together to support basic rights, like the right to hold up a sign on a median, which disappeared last year under the onslaught of the Bryant Robinson Comstock Council. We're soon going to see the mayor attempt to stop me from tape recording at city council unless I'm standing next to or sitting next to my tape recorder. And I'm probably going to show up and do it anyway and, you know, risk whatever is required there to uphold various constitutional rights. I don't know exactly what's going to be coming up at the first council meeting. We'll see about that. But I'm thinking about it because this inch-by-inch destruction of local civil rights is really bad news for all of us. And it's something it upsets me, and I hope it upsets you. And I hope it upsets Arthur Hull, because if it did and people began to really show up for these events and show up when others' rights are threatened, like this ridiculous public safety task force, this public hysteria task force, as it really should be known, you know, there should have been an orchestra that showed up outside the building mocking this crap, and because it has nothing to do with public safety. It's a sort of a device used by various neighborhood bigoted organizations to push a gentrification agenda and to get rid of homeless people and to rebrand them as suspicious derelicts, criminals, and wrongdoers who have to be treated as public safety hazards. And that, of course, is crap. And instead of calling it crap, you had the liberals sort of saying, well, we're very concerned about public safety because of the death of Butchie Baker and Elizabeth Butler, the two police officers who were killed. It has nothing to do with anything the Public Safety Committee is doing. Or, you know, the killing of Sharon Collins, or is it Shannon Collins? I'm never quite sure what that first name is. The camouflage co-owner. These are used by these, you know, growing right-wing pressure groups, take back Santa Cruz, or take over Santa Cruz, as I like to call it. Anyway, let's hear some more from New Year's Eve, and then maybe a little something more from that vanilla group, the Capitol Steps.
To raise the price of the tickets.
And then nobody came.
Right.
Right.
And then they couldn't afford to do it, and they could shut it down. But then the DIY group, people came together on themselves without a permit.
Official, non-official drum circle parade non-coordinators. And we lost those a couple of years ago, and they didn't have one. So people are just showing up because they know that it's time to show up. And different groups are showing up at different times. But generally speaking, you know, we had a 3 or 4 block parade, and then we had a 3 block parade, and then we had a 2 block. Last year was a 1 block parade. This looks like it's going to be a half a block parade. So I hope to see you here next year, but I don't know if it's going to happen or not.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling so well. I was thinking I'm not coming down.
No, I'm sick as a dog. I can't have my friends. I'm sick as a dog, but I'm still here. That's just the way it is.
Well, I do notice another change. It's like Walgreens has sort of monopolized the parking lot. So we now have, you remember in past years, people would assemble in the lot.
Right, right, and set up, yeah. Oh, well, actually, they're smart. They're lining up on the sidewalk, so when the parade starts, there's not a massive amount of confusion. So it's a good system.
Although it shows there's less people, and also
right.
It shows...
No, this, you know, what, 10 years ago, this parking lot was full of different groups and people coming together, you know, to celebrate New Year's in a family-friendly, non-alcoholic, non-political way. Now, as it's gotten a little more political, some people are just not supporting it.
And, of course, the alcohol comes later when there's a massive gathering of people, about, what, 10 or 20 times the parade size that we
have. Right, right, right.
And they don't have a permit either. And no one's
ever
complained about them.
Well,
I guess they complain, but they don't do anything.
The idea was to... Oh, wait a minute. People before profit. Okay. I'm looking for Women in Black for Peace. No, nobody? I don't see anybody. I don't see a group of women in black for peace.
Well, Sherry might know where that is.
Okay.
Sherry Connable.
Let's go find out. Because,
okay.
We
have Joy down here with her sign, People Before Profit.
She's a new
name. Black.
Who?
Women in black. The one with the big peace sign at the beginning.
Oh, right.
Only
is that
one person?
Only one person.
The one person, woman in black. Black.
Have more than that.
Contingent.
We're all women in black.
Yeah. Right, right.
I could pretend to be a woman in black.
I've got a banner for them. And
Cindy,
and
Robert, Cindy.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, so Becky Johnson is laying out items from her box of crime. She's got a blanket she's pulled out.
Hacky-sack.
She has a small hacky sack.
That's illegal.
Hacky-sacking is specifically illegal. Name hacky-sacking downtown.
On Pacific Avenue.
I never heard
illegal.
As well.
On Pacific Avenue.
And the downtown area.
And a ball.
There's a football and a tennis ball. She's demonstrating implements of crime here.
All hurted because someone threw one of these.
A frisbee.
Illegal.
Window or something?
No, just down the street to annoy the merchants. We don't want to annoy the merchants.
And they're singing.
They're playing fun.
Which they cite you for unreasonably disturbing noise should you sing a song out loud.
The wrong kind of song.
The wrong kind of song.
Bubbles.
Bubbles are not illegal.
Bubbles are not illegal, actually.
Only if you're a professional bubble performance artist.
Then
it's legal.
But if you're homeless and you have bubbles, then it's definitely
illegal. It may be an error on Becky.
No amateur
in the world in bubbles.
I'm sure there's a good reason.
So it's actually, technically it's legal for me to blow bubbles because I was trained by Tom Noddy, who is a professional bubble blower.
He doesn't have a permit.
Therefore, he can vouch that I am now a professional bubble blower. Professionally trained, at least.
Do you have paperwork to prove what you're saying?
Well, I just have to get paid to be a professional.
Oh,
so.
We can pay you.
I'm sure you don't have the right license. I'm saying you're not legally allowed to blow bubbles.
Thank God we have somebody here who's had his skirt on.
Oh, we know about that. The chalk thing is definitely.
Yes, it is illegal to make a mark.
I mean, really, people.
She's making her mark on the sidewalk. I'm not going to say who's doing this, but.
Really? Bubbles? Really?
I don't think bubbles are illegal. I guess the one item I disagree with Becky.
Oh, okay.
But that's my reading of the law. Other things that are going to be legal now are public assembly. I think our public assembly is illegal. Is there more than 100 people?
Yeah, all that. And then, of course, the Ten Amendments, you know, the First Amendment, you know, those are like sort of in the way of most city managers.
White slaveholders, they may stand. But
of course, we have the dreaded tobacco, which is illegal just about everywhere
so
now.
Petty. That's
Did you
so
bring
petty.
Along an open container? No.
Petty is the way that you.
You forgot about
that's
that,
a great
you?
Idea, Becky. I love that you're
Hey,
very nice.
You're going to be arrested
for yeah.
All right,
I'm not going to deny. Do you have any more colors?
Look at this. Someone has drawn a peace symbol.
That's it.
Yeah. Surrounded by zodiac. What the heck is this?
Yeah.
Hearts
and flowers.
Hearts and flowers on the sidewalk. I'll get some more chalk. Let me interview you for free radio. What's your name, sir?
Wesley.
And Wesley, what is this carriage you have? You seem to be attached to a bicycle. Looks like some ancient horse drawn, but you're the horse.
My wife found it and said, we should get this. And we did. And we bring it out for New Year's, Halloween, Christmas, you know, all the parades, basically.
I take it, of course, you have no permit.
Permit? Do you have to have a permit for this?
You always need a permit. I mean, you're smoking as well. My God, what's going on here, man? What's next? Are you going to be sitting down next to a building or possibly falling asleep?
No, I actually just, I live right over there, so.
Well, you're local resident.
Yeah.
Sort of a criminal in residence.
Yes, well, I kind of keep the criminals around here honest.
Ah. So this is a carriage you're going to be carrying your family in?
Yes.
As you tool down the street.
We decorate it for every different event, and then we come out and, just like to show it off and take a ride.
And we've been talking with
Wesley.
Thanks, Wesley. So there actually are a few people in the Walgreens lot who are dressing up in costumes, parking in the Walgreens spots. I'm about to go into Walgreens to purchase some chewing gum so I can actually, show that I've been a customer. I have a two-hour right to supposedly park here. We have a man with an unusual. Is that? Hey, that's Fuhrer Obama. I didn't know you'd make it to Santa Cruz. You have a sign, Fuhrer Obama. I promise to listen to you, America, always.
Always.
And you have a telephone. You're on the phone.
Yeah,
you're keeping an ear on the nation.
Large apps. I've got the magnifying glass. Any way I can listen to you
pay attention to you, I will, and I am.
Well, thank God someone is listening in.
Yes, we're listening.
And is this Michelle? Michelle, you've gotten much paler.
I don't know. I'm a secretary, actually.
Oh, you're a secretary.
Yeah.
You.
Michelle's not really into this kind of stuff.
No, she's not. Michelle is above this, or beneath all.
Yeah. Above or beneath.
She's beneath me.
I see. That's how it is at home, eh? Interesting.
You can call me Boo. That's my initial.
Oh, Boo?
Boo, yeah. Barack, some of us.
Oh, right. B-O, so to speak. There's a certain stench to it.
He needs a secretary to keep track of all this, millions of emails, texts, phone calls, and all this other stuff, So...
So you're here. You're it.
Yeah.
And only one. You can actually keep track of all the calls.
No, she just called.
It's a tough job. Yeah.
We're doing everything. Not just.
I understand. We don't even have to call you. We don't have to call you. You'll listen in on us.
We've already got it down. We're listening all the time.
We will let you know what you've said.
Not only America. I'm listening to Germany. I'm listening to Mexico. I'm listening to the whole world's in my hands.
Well, at least
if you ever forget anything, we'll tell you what you forgot.
That
we'll know.
A true public service. We've been talking with.
And there's no extra charge. And I've paid for it.
Carol, and of course, B.O., Barack Obama, with fluorescent, blinking red horns. Yeah. Is this some sort of a horny statement?
Or something? We're just the last night, right? The first day.
I guess so. Thank you, sir. Right. Thank you, mein Führer, I should say.
It's against the law to obscure your identity, sir.
Wearing a mask in a public place.
Call me Boo.
Yeah. Or Boo-hoo, as the case may be. Yeah. What's your name, sir?
I don't want to give my name. Your NSA already has my name.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, wait, how about you, madam? You wish to say who you are?
Well, I know who you are.
At least you're ahead of me at the game.
Well, let me tell you about yourself.
Go ahead. I'd love to. Listen, there's no subject of more interest to me. So I purchased some lozenges, a couple of other items, and so I'm hopeful that this is happening at about 5:35.
All this discussion was pre-parade march. This was where people were gathering on the sidewalk at the, the one street up from Laurel and Pacific, and preparing to march across Laurel and Pacific down onto the Pacific. I hate to call it the Pacific Garden Mall, since there's not really much remnant of garden left there. Pacific Concrete Mall, the Pacific Security Guard Merchant Commercialized Mall. I don't know, whatever you will.
That means I should have 2 hours worth of time. And hopefully that will be what's cooking. It will immunize me from... a tow, perhaps?
So I was anticipating, actually, there being a much longer parade over a longer period of time, and I wanted to leave my car parked there without it being towed, since there are now two-hour parking signs in the parking lot, which I don't know how long they've been there, but they weren't there, at least certainly in some of the previous DIY events from New Year's past.
Approaching the drum circle, there's Grant, who showed up with his bicycle. And people are dancing and bubbling and pounding drums, all without a permit. Very depressing, I must say. We have a group here of about 5, 10, 15 drummers who are drumming as we prepare to parade it up. We have a little kazoo recital here. Can we hum along with that? What do you think? Recognize that tune, actually. I'm not sure. I think about it. Comments on your organizing, leading, and being responsible for every parade since 1992?
32.
Oh, okay. Well, really? You don't look.
This is Wes Modes, who I'm talking to in the parade, who was, I think, maintaining a low profile, but you know me, I expose everybody who's in the parade, and oh well.
Well,
I 78th annual DIY New Year's Parade, and I'm happy to be part of it. And I feel like I'm getting on in years. But
you have a red tie on. Is there some significance to that?
None. I was just walking, and then there were bright lights, and then there was a pain in my ear, and I woke up, and there was this tag on it.
Well, you and your associates both have tags, 443, 452, and 457. Should I refer to you all by number?
These are tags on their ears, like part of the costume, perhaps an indication of how they feel people will be treated in the future.
Or by name, what would be the way to...
I don't know, man. I don't know anything.
You know nothing.
I know nothing.
Any other comments? No.
Is there Wi-Fi?
No, I wish there were, pathetically enough. Thank you. Yeah, that was Wes Mose and Companions. All right, now what do you think of this here parade, since I'm getting through free radio? We're doing a little commentary here.
Pretty good. We come every year.
And how many have you come to?
Probably 7, 8.
Wow.
Like that. And first night when it was here. Love first night.
A lot of people do. I see you brought along some younger folks, too.
What happened?
So many are in party hats and family groups in the parade. Some have drums. Some have floats. After the new year. Now, what does this mean? Are you thinking the new year is going to get away from you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Got to get it fast. As fast as you can.
Well, why do you think it's going to escape?
Well, it's fleeting and fresh.
So you wish to make sure that you seize every instant of it.
Every instant. And be present in the moment as we advance the parade.
Be present in the moment. Even as we walk along. My camera falls to the ground.
And capture every minute
of it. Keep
it
fresh.
Perfectly. For the whole next year.
Well, here we go. We'll see what happens next. So the parade folks have taken to the streets after initially using the sidewalk for the first block of the parade.
We are walking in the light.
Without a permit, Blake, what would Hillary Bryant say? Now, come on. Apparently not.
And here I am talking with Steve Plaich at the head of the parade, referring again, of course, to his praise for Hillary Bryant. Here's some more dialogue.
She was so dazzled by your letter in the Sentinel.
And you know, regardless of what you've heard, we're just good friends.
Oh, okay, well.
The power trio in town, Steve Plaich, Lynn Robinson, and Hillary Bryant, look for us at the next gathering to oppress the First Amendment rights folks.
Take back Steve Plaich, that's what I say.
Chase all the vendors out of town and make sure the artists can't make a living and shut down Occupy Santa Cruz. Let's get. What about that Norse fellow? Let's do something about him.
And yet, none of that appeared.
Wait, they passed us by. The fire engine didn't even go through the parade. What kind of a...
Where's your cop-watching sandwich board this year?
I'm keeping my hands open so I can deal with events that arise.
As they eventuate? As they unfold?
Yes. So are you...
You want to be around movers and shakers like myself as we go into the new year? It's the year of Steve Plaich, you know, 2014.
It's a little shaky, I think, yeah. So Steve, have you received much commentary on your letter published both in the Good Times and the Sentinel? I believe it was the Good Times, or was it the Weekly?
The Weekly.
Praising Hillary Bryant, the mayor, although not really getting too specific about her achievements.
It was just my expression of appreciation for her service, and I think there is time to be critical of her social policy.
And time to be hypocritical?
Well, there's always time for that. Now, have you read my latest Indie Bay posting on the Citizens of Police Review Safety Post?
I interrupt because I see Steve doing what I used to see Scott Kennedy doing, who is actually a much more successful politician than Steve, as well as being the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. He was and a tax resister, and I give him credit for both those things, but not for his repressive behavior as a city council member, though once you get on the city council, it takes a pretty strong individual with dedicated to certain principles that have nothing to do with advancing through the political system to maintain a resistance to an independence of the political structure. But what we heard a moment ago was Plaich was talking about making jokes about how Bryant was very repressive and how he was getting a part of, he was a part of that whole, he was mocking himself as being a part of that repression. But that's to be played to the audience of lefties who were in the parade, like myself and others who listen to this radio show. What I'm concerned about is the one, you've got to show one face to the entire community in some sense, or else you are two-faced or many-faced. That's the problem. So politicians, of course, have a habit of referring to the, you know, tailoring what they say and how they appear to the particular interest group or constituency they're talking to. And that's what he's doing here. And you know, as far as politicians go, Steve is probably the best of the group that's around, likely to be running for city council, though I've seen better running for city council. Linda LeMaster ran for city council. Linda Edwards ran. Jane Immler ran. Steve Argue ran. Thomas Levitt ran. I was even a write-in candidate once, just to sort of give people a write-in alternative that had nothing to do with really trying to win the council election or anything of that sort. But it's the reason you see me devoting a lot of time to Plaich, I guess, is because I'm kind of bitter, and I shouldn't be. I can't quite believe that he's not the principled person he presents himself as. But politicians aren't, and he isn't either. And that's too bad. And that's... if we ever get in the studio and have a back-and-forth dialogue on that, you know, it would be interesting. But I don't think that's going to happen. I've been calling him recently on the air, as you know, and I haven't been able to get him to answer his phone when we're on the air. And I'll try that again before the end of the evening, but I'm not giving any odds that he'll answer the phone. And again, it's probably not worth the energy to even discuss it further. So let's continue by hearing more of the first night celebration. You are tuned, by the way, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, in case you just tuned in. Let's take a little bit of a break, and then I'll be right back.
We waited for the court to rule against Obamacare. Strike it down seemed like a cinch. A 5-4 decision was announced. We thought we'd won. Who have guessed there was a cheater on bench? Now here's to you, Sis Roberts. Lost you more will. On Trump as onwards once. Also born in Kenya long ago. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We heard the news that since you ruled against that Commerce Clause, folks are saying you're a clever lad. But conservatives won't stand for universal health. It's the worst idea Mitt Romney ever had. Can we impeach Justice Roberts soon? Judas did the same to you know who. Where did we get Justice Roberts, though? Liberals and the right now both can claim, like everything, Bush is to blame.
So that was another one from the Capitol Steps, Fiscal Shades of Gray, and that one was called Justice Roberts. Online here with us, a call-in from that perennial caller-inner, David Minton Silva, or Dead On David, as I've called him. Hey, David.
Hey, Uncle Robert.
And you were go ahead. You were calling, I know, to...
Yeah.
To suggest that, you know, I go light on Steve, but that you kind of agree.
No, not that you go light on Steve. It's just that we really don't want to. It's since we all sort of agree that he's the best it is and that ain't good, maybe we ought to just leave him be, not talk bad about him. When the revolution comes, maybe we can kick those sleeping dogs and see if we can get him to wake up. Meanwhile, I think we should just leave well enough alone. But, you know, hey, you know, it's your show. You also did a whole stream of city council candidates that were of some value, and you didn't include me in that list.
You know, you're right. I think that was, we're talking about back in 1996 when you were a candidate, but I think your candidacy was dislodged by Officer Andy Crane's assault on you at city council.
Well, he just dislodged my head from my neck when he picked me up and threw me, city council, up against the court, against the wall. It was a good way to derail a candidate, because it looked like being a union officer and having some progressive credentials, it looked like we actually might have a progressive opportunity that time. And Sergeant Andy Crane and the police officers, God bless them. Their souls are such dire, dire danger. God bless those pigs.
Well,
they took me out of the campaign. You know it. You witnessed it.
Yeah, David, let me ask you, because you were running that year. I know that, you know, you and I had our differences of opinion 4 years later when you were kind of the go-to guy for ending the sleeping ban, at least in some limited way, that Mayor Sugar, Keith Sugar.
I wrote a pretty good initiative petition drive.
After the initiative, when you were attempting to, you know, get something workable through the city council as a law change, where, you know, I think Fitzmaurice said you can sleep by the side of the road with no covering or some other ridiculous.
Just as long as you're hanging out with Robert Norris, you could do that.
Yes. But, I mean, I'm interested more in the impact of politics on leftists. And that's particularly true with Green Party people, too. We saw it with Fitzmaurice. I mean, you were a defender of Fitzmaurice's, you know, in the early years of this millennium. And I know that, I mean, that was, you know,
he was our first Green candidate, you know, to achieve something. And I was a pretty loyal Green Party person then. I'm considering switching back to the Peace and Freedom Party. I'm so disgusted with my party, but at the same time, Peace and Freedom Party has a lot to be lacking. Maybe I'll just give them word of praise here on the air and let that be enough.
Well, you know,
it's been a hard road to stay radical and stay progressive in a town that, you know, has this progressive image. But really, it's one of the worst towns in the state or the nation for homeless people and for people that believe in the ecology. Both. It's a horrible town. People ought to wake up. Wake up, people. That's why I'm calling. Wake up, people.
Well, you know, again, I'm interested as a politician. I mean, your campaign, as I said, was severely truncated in 1996 when you ran for city council by, first of all, you know, you were struggling and still are struggling as a person with AIDS. And you also, you know, had a situation where this injury that was foisted upon you by Sergeant Andy Crane when you attempted to present petitions to the city council around the same time that other protesters were actually doing a chanting of, I guess it was at Homes Not Jails, or shut down the council, because they had, again, refused to do anything about the sleeping ban as a long, I guess it was a four or five month long protest at City Hall. The City Hall sleepers protest had gone on month after month.
That one was really looking good, you know? That one was really looking good for
change. You ran for City Council. Do you think that as a politician running, did you find yourself giving different speeches to different groups and being kind of, as I would say, two-faced because of the need to appeal to a certain group? What was your experience?
Well, I don't think you found me two-faced, and I was glad for that. And I think there is one of the early decisions that people make, that they're going to be a little bit two-faced, and the most important thing is to get elected. Well, no, the most important thing is to get elected on an honest ticket. When people vote for me, I want them to know who the fuck they're voting for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I know a lot of us felt upset later, not so much when you were running, but in, you know, 4 years later, as to the, you know, your attempt. You excluded other activists from meetings at the insistence of the mayor, Keith Sugar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
From the city council meeting or from my meeting?
From your meetings with the powers that be. We were activists.
Just to hear that disgusts me. I can't believe that. Keith must have really twisted my arm in some kind of special way.
To be completely accurate about it, what you might want to do is talk with activist Becky Johnson, who is, you know, on the ground there. She's someone you can more easily communicate with around this. But did you find you had to make compromises in the 1996 campaign before you were, you know, essentially disabled from continuing the campaign?
Yeah, I know that's when you met, and I didn't remember myself compromising. Yes, let's put it that way. But I certainly do remember being asked, and I thought I stood ground and gave people a nod. Well, I'll acknowledge what you're saying, but this is my position. I thought I always did that, but if I didn't, kick me in the ass. And if I ever run again, I'm going to be as straight shooter as I can be. Because
I mean, I know that when you called in tonight, you said, go easy on Steve because, why waste our time with
him? I didn't say go easy on Steve. I said, let's just let him go when it comes to public airways and giving this thing that we object to even more credence. Maybe since I agree with what your criticism of him. I'm just saying to nag on him, then it just becomes how bad a guy you are, not him.
You think
so? Let it go.
I guess, to me, I mean, I it's like it's always been important for me to expose what I regard as maybe this is too.
Yeah, and that's your job, Robert. You're right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
the
inadequacies of people on the left, we're all inadequate. You might say, well, anybody's better than these clowns on the right. But the issue is really, what have you got left when you have, somebody like Steve who has, been on the board of directors of the ACLU for a year and a half and hasn't, taken the trouble to introduce any homeless resolutions locally and taken no action. Well, his actions are just, very, very much seem to be a part of the process of, assimilation that happens. And I do blame Steve for it, and I am upset about it, but I also wonder if this isn't just the natural or the perverted process that happens when politicians try to, change things.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you misunderstood me, I'm saying, oh, yes, I was approached, and it disgusted me to an incredible amount. The amount that I was approached, it was disgusting. I was ready to, when I was going to get elected, I was really going to, blow the whistle on all these people, and then ended up, like you say, I was derailed.
Well, you didn't give up, though. You kept fighting for sleeping ban initiatives over the years.
I'm coming back every year slower and stronger, but I'm going to be stronger again this next year, even stronger yet. So I'm just so thankful for you, Robert. I'm just thankful you're there. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, David.
Bye-bye.
That's David Minton Silva, a candidate for city council in 1996, booster of two sleeping ban initiative campaigns in the late 90s, and actually a third one, and when he actually was able to get the leadership of city council to pass on a first reading safe sleeping zones, which were then derailed by a malicious campaign of misrepresentation by the police force, the Sentinel, conservatives on the city council led by Rotkin and others. That's all kind of part of the history of the year 2013 years ago, but since we're fighting similar battles now, it's worth taking a look back. Let's hear some more from the DIY parade, and pretty soon Uncle Dennis will be coming into the studio with a little musical selection or two for you.
Think the review board?
You should talk to this woman in front of you, Sherry Connable, who was instrumental in establishing the first Citizens Police Review Board and is well aware of its drawbacks and how it was eventually destroyed.
Well, as I understand, one of the posters we've seen, some guy was on the Fresno County Grand Jury, and he was telling me that one of the problems with civilian oversight...
Standing illegally on the median. Shocking.
Yes,
shocking.
That is illegal. You're going to chronicle that? Well,
I'm making notes.
Apparently, the police officer's Bill of Rights has kind of eviscerated any kind of...
The Copley decision.
Yeah, pay the Copley decision.
But I actually sent a note to the cop watch in Berkeley, Andrea Pritchard, to find out if the Police Review Commission there is serving any function and should get a reply shortly.
Oh, well, good. Because he was made a lot of sense, this fellow, was saying that basically the police officer's Bill of Rights and the Copley decision had kind of eviscerated any effectiveness that any civilian oversight board would have. Because you can't run parallel investigations because all that information is confidential.
Unless citizens do the investigating, independent of government.
Oh, well, that's what we'd like to do.
Right. It looks like the crowd is getting...
If that's what he'd like to do, then that's what he should do, not just talk about doing it. But let's hear some more.
Bigger. And listen, you have a sign that says listen. What does this mean? There's a peace sign on the back. And so, in essence, listen to your inner peace, perhaps. silence is golden. Get that fucking tape recorder out of my mouth. any other thoughts?
We might all do better to listen a little more.
Here, here. Or listen, as the case may be. Who have we been talking? What's your name?
Janet.
Sorry, Janet. I forget people's names over the years. And we have the infamous Jean Pirano, the Food Not Bombs terrorist, digging after her mentor. Yeah, look at this. There's a man writing tickets over there. Steve!
Your mentor?
A ticket being written over here. Isn't this exciting?
And this is, I then approach two police officers, one of them Officer Winston, writing citations or writing something in a book for two guys who are seated on the sidewalk area, the Union Grove parking lot area, which the parade was passing by.
And a ticket.
Hmm? Where's the gang?
Your police department at work! Citations downtown!
Where's the gang tickets for?
I don't know. Hey, man, what are you getting a ticket for? Sitting on the sidewalk. Really? I'm told it's a sitting on the sidewalk ticket here, folks. Citations for sitting on the sidewalk. Hey. And it should be said, this is the police gang task force. So what happened, sir?
This gang task force was written across the back of some of the police officers' uniforms, or one of them, I believe. I didn't actually get to see what the citation was, whether it was a citation or a warning. I don't know how accurate the individual was, but I do know the two individuals looked shabbily dressed and somewhat intoxicated, like not unable to take care of themselves. We are talking about New Year's Eve, when there's a major intoxication later in the evening. But the police are going out of the way to pick out these two people. Now, again, you might say, well, maybe they had a bad attitude, or maybe they did something else, or maybe there was a warrant check, or maybe this, maybe that. But, well, judge for yourselves based upon what you hear in this audio discussion, this audio documentation.
Soda, man. I'm sitting down, like, doing nothing, brother. I'm a fucking drunk, dude.
Well, yes. Now, so you're not getting a ticket for being intoxicated in public.
Dude, hey, I haven't really drank anything today, but these fucking douchebags are doing, like, they threw away soda.
It smells like soda.
Like, dude, what does this, like...
And the gang task force moves on, proud and strong. Oh, they're moving the other way now.
What happened is Officer Winston and his companion on the gang task force, both in uniform, started walking down the street in the same direction toward the town clock, away from these two who were seated, or actually one of them is now standing up, talking with me, and then turned around to walk back, perhaps because they heard a taunt. That seemed to me to be the most likely explanation, but I couldn't say for sure why they came back. And then grabbed one man, took him off to the side. Two other officers arrived, and on the side street they surrounded him and began either interrogating him or IDing him or further citing him. It wasn't too clear exactly what was going on, and I was, frankly, eager to catch up with the parade, but I was looking at what I felt was my primary responsibility, which was to document this instance of, seemed to me, pretty selective enforcement on New Year's Eve. Just, we aren't talking about violent behavior, we're talking about homeless-looking drunks, which certainly people who are homeless have just as much a right to be intoxicated on New Year's Eve. And the standard, as you'll hear me discuss or claim with another person, is not if you're intoxicated, but if you can take care of yourself without, you know, falling down or injuring other people. And these people were not unable to take care of themselves, and so it seemed to me.
All right, so they've come back to deal further with these folks. So one of the individuals taking off his backpack, the individual spoke before, he is now being put in handcuffs. I'm not sure. Ask what you're being arrested for.
It doesn't really matter.
bathrooms, and
I'm curious.
Public intoxication.
Yeah, well, he is a bit intoxicated, but can he take care of himself?
Yes, he can.
And that means this is a false arrest, not Officer Winston doing a false arrest. Well, here come a couple more police officers to join in the fun. We have two more officers approaching, or at least walking by. He's being arrested for public intoxication, but he is not in any way unable to take care of himself, hence it's a false arrest. You can be intoxicated publicly as long as you don't, as long as you can take care of yourself.
Yeah, but if you're intoxicated in public, isn't it a crime?
No, it's not.
I'm pretty sure it is.
No, it's not? No, I'm pretty sure. You can look it up online. Because he talked back to them as they didn't like
it. Public intoxication if he's publicly intoxicated?
Only if he can't take care of himself. That's the standard.
Well, who's to say he can take care of himself?
Well, unless he's staggering, falling down drunk, which he wasn't when I talked to him,
yeah,
he can take care of himself.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
That's...
He doesn't appear to be that...
Yeah, so that was my evaluation.
I'm just saying, I thought it was a crime, but you're right, he doesn't appear to be intoxicated. So.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's my view, too.
The question is whether he's gravely disabled, and I don't think he is.
All right, so how are you doing, man? And what's your analysis of this? You're the...
My analysis is because I've been sitting on this corner and throwing it off for like 12 years. I come through this town a lot. I do off chain sometimes. I do hitchhike sometimes. I play music on these corners.
There's a Union Grove corner here.
Yes. And just because I argue, they said that they could deem that I am incapable of taking care of myself and could take me to jail and take my dog.
You seem pretty coherent.
I'm pretty coherent,
sir. You don't
seem
very intoxicated, huh?
I'm not intoxicated. I've had a couple beers today, sir, but that does not make me intoxicated. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out
there. Unlit cigarette in your hand and another unlit one behind your ear. Shocking.
Yeah, man, it's not lit. And they're telling me that they can take me to jail for public intoxication.
I'm going to go get a photo of these brave men. Hang on, I'll be back.
Thank you, sir.
And your name is? If you wish.
John Ray Fleming, Jr.
And is the individual first name of the guy who's being hassled? If you know it.
Zap.
Thank you, Zeph. I mean, thank you, John. So Officer Garazio is blocking the pathway because we have four police officers and one guy sitting on the curb here. Let's take a photo of this, shall we? Officer Garazio, why are you preventing me from walking past?
Officer safety.
You think that I'm a menace to your officers?
Absolutely.
Confirm 154.
Well, I appreciate the implication that I have that power. I see. Well, I'll leave you to your good work. Because I've got better things to do. We had Officers Winston, Garazio, and two others in that particular stop. So I'm attempting to catch up with the parade here.
I do want to say, it kind of depressed me in a reflection, though not at the time, that no one else really stopped. The parade did not come over to, you know, witness or observe this harassment of two people watching the parade, but continued their little politically correct march. And it was just kind of sad as I think about it. It is, because if the purpose of the parade is to reassert constitutional rights, like the right to parade, the right to celebrate, certainly these two men also have that right. And when that's being denied by armed thugs, and there's enough people around to stop that from happening just by their presence, then that should become part of the whole mission of what we're doing out there. And indeed, I think one of the reasons they initially stopped ticketing the guy was because I think one or two other people showed up and started loudly discussing it. I could be wrong there, but that was my sense.
Now, it's sort of a more people today than usual.
Back later on tonight,
and it's, of course, later on in the evening, it's going to be very full. It is now about 15 to 6, and the parade is kind of, part of the parade is halted or slowed in front of the Del Mar Theater, or so I see from a distance. Leading up the back of the parade, leading is the proper word, we have in a tri-cornered hat, Grant Wilson on his bike mobile.
and a sitar player, very comfortably situated. Do you have a permit for this whole thing, sir?
No, this is a sitar downstrike here. It's a moving sitar downstrike.
Very moved by the whole
thing. Rare thing.
Medium rare, or?
Yes.
Well, I would say it's extremely well done.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We've been talking with?
Grant.
Thank you, Grant.
Robert.
Not in the parade, but taking photos from the side, former Mayor Chris Crone. Come on, Chris, join the parade. What is this thing you're holding?
I have no idea.
Oh, but you're part of the parade, as well as three others in back. It looks like some kind of... I'll go take a look and see what it is. Mr. Schultz, what is this?
This is peace. This is what peace looks like.
The peace dove.
The peace dove. Hi, Mandy. Happy New Year.
So the peace dove is actually being held by how many people? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. Seven people are holding up the peace dove.
Many of them are kids. Many of them are kids. The kids really want to take a turn because this image is so powerful that they get that they are part of peace.
Indeed. But, of course, peace without justice is a sad thing.
Peace without justice is...
Not really peace.
Not really peace. And it's quiet, but it's not really peace.
Yeah,
in the heart.
I hear you. And we've been talking with...
I'm Sasha from India Joe's.
Thanks, Sasha. Well, we have a mad kisser. What's your name, kisser?
Mrs. Higgins.
And Mrs. Higgins, why are you running around kissing people?
Well, anybody that's friends with my mother must be kissable.
I see. So it's not a matter of sexual attraction, more of affection.
Yes.
I see. I'm just trying to clarify that fact. You understand. Any other thoughts from today's parade?
Oh, Happy New Year.
Thank you. And to you as well. So it looks like... I don't know, 50 to 100 people on the sidelines in each block. It's a somewhat scanty audience watching. Although folks have, the parade has kind of slowed down up here. And the peace dove is taking its time. Up here we have more of a congregation or a cluster of folks. My goodness. We have a fellow on a bicycle who is, he's a wheeler and dealer, clearly. And the parade is kind of moving at a slower pace up here as I pass Dale Williams at the end of the parade. Hey, and the same to you too. Indy Media is here, keeping an eye on the parade. There's Bradley. There's a big red classic wagon that's serving a cocoa and mushrooms. I mean marshmallows. Slip of the tongue. Cocoa Motion, it's called. Are you the famous Cocoa Motion man?
We are the famous Cocoa Motioners.
And what's your name?
I'm Elliot.
And you are?
Stacy.
You're the real brains of the outfit, right?
Stacy and Emily, both of us who did it, and Nora, who's not here.
How many cups of cocoa do you intend to give out tonight?
We tend to give out about 200 cups of cocoa tonight. We're also doing s'mores.
S'mores?
S'mores in motion.
S'mores in motion.
S'mores in motion.
Right here, Ruby.
Well, I'm going to leave you to your cocoa activities.
Keep okay.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Several of human locomoted sort of moving platforms here. Caution, wide ride. There's some pretty high folks, about 9 feet up there. There's a guy bouncing a big ball. Hey, you do. It's bouncy, bouncy time. We pass the approach the Cinnamon Eye. And the drummers are going onto the sidewalk for no clear reason. It's like Mike and Maureen Smith have a table set up. Cindy Sheehan for California State Governor.
Cindy Sheehan for governor. Cindy for governor. He's smiling and nodding. Any quick news reports locally?
News reports? Nope.
That could be good.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we've been talking with
MJS.
Thank you, MJS. And Mike is at a table right across from the Cinema 9. And folks seem to be enjoying the float. Of police officers. Oh, it's Officer Winston and his colleague down here on Pacific Avenue. No, it's not. It's a new police officer. Sleeping is not a crime, says the sign.
Who knows what's a crime anymore? I still believe the Constitution. I don't care about politicians. Do or not.
I see a juggler and some kind of odd bird over here. What kind of bird are you, Matt?
Big Bird.
You are. But I'm bigger than you are, Big Bird.
Well, but you're not a bird, are you?
I'm more of a bird brain, some say.
Well, there you are.
There I am. Boy, I walked into that one, didn't I? Well, what's your name?
There's a bird. There's a
bird. Now, the dove of peace is passing by. Well, good luck, you Big Bird.
Thank you.
In the middle of this parade, we have the secret heart, the true mastermind behind this entire affair. Your name for our police record?
Blavnerica.
Oh, Mr. Blavnerica, how long have you been...